Now, speaking of language and not mangling it and getting it all right, because we're talking about great Irish women's speeches, and joining me in studio is Professor Sonia Tiernan. Good morning.
Good morning, Oliver.
From UCD, or is it UCD Press? I presume there's a connection.
Yeah, so UCD Press is has published the book.
Okay, and it's as it says on the cover, Irish women's speeches, amazing Irish women who made an impact through the words. And there's a huge array of speeches here. How long did it take you to put...
Yeah, I'd say it's one of those projects, actually, that I've always had in the back of my mind. Wouldn't it be great to do this? But then to actually start it in earnest, I'd say 3 years, really, actually, between gathering speeches and researching each woman to get a nice background of each of them and the context of the speech and stuff. So, yeah.
And this is an incredible job, because some of the speeches actually were kind of missing to time, weren't they? And you collage them together. We'll come to some of that in a minute. But it's just the idea behind it, because we quote the great men of, because they have, men
Absolutely.
Have dominated political history. So you tend to quote these fellas.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of filling in the gaps of history in a way, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Balancing it out, I think. Although our Tory MP would probably say that I'm just replacing some of our female role models.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just balancing out, because that's the thing. It's so many volumes. We're wonderful for appreciating great speeches in Irish history. But they're all men's speeches, like you say. And actually, the speeches are there, but it was just really finding them and uncovering them to find the women. And it's just a more balanced approach, really.
Yeah. Charles Stuart Parnell, obviously famous orator in his own right. You feature his sister, Anna. I did not know about Anna. Tell us about her and why she's in this book.
Okay, yeah. Anna Parnell. What's wonderful, this is the very first speech. So they start in 1881. So it's essentially 140 years that we have of these women's speeches. And Charles Stuart Parnell had two wonderful sisters, Anna and Fanny Parnell, who had originally started up the Ladies' Land League in New York to gather money for Charles Stuart Parnell's cause of the National Land League at the time. It was during, again, a lot of evictions of tenant farmers, and also a second wave of famine was hitting into certain areas, bad recession in the late 1870s and into 1880s. But Anna Parnell was summoned basically back to Dublin to start up a branch of the Ladies' Land League here in Ireland. And this spread considerably. And for a time when the National Land League was shut down, I suppose, and the leaders like Parnell, Charles Stuart Parnell, imprisoned, it was Anna Parnell and her Ladies' Land League. They were the only ones that were actually campaigning for tenants' rights.
Yeah.
And really, they would be seen as the very first politically active group of women. And these weren't women who were just gathering money, and they were actually attending evictions. They were supporting tenants. They were taking notes of everything. And Anna Parnell herself was an amazing orator. And the speech that I've included was just one that she gave in Scotland. She went over to Glasgow. She did a tour of Scotland for a month, basically getting support for the Ladies' Land League.
What's amazing about it is that she was blockbuster. She was packing out packing the crowds, wasn't
absolutely,
she?
Absolutely. She had huge followings. And I'm working in New Zealand at the moment, actually. One of the first things I checked when I went over there was there branches of the Ladies' Land League? And there was in New Zealand. And Anna Parnell's speeches were reported in the newspapers in New Zealand quite regularly, which is extraordinary if you think in the 1880s that you've got somebody reporting worldwide. Her speeches were wonderful. What's great is as well that the journalists record them, and they record the reaction of the audience cheering and laughing at points, and you know.
Yes, which would have been just lost to time otherwise. And she obviously, part of her fame was just being attacked, wasn't it, by MPs, church leaders and so on, because women just didn't do this
Absolutely.
Type of thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Nan Joyce
is really a remarkable woman. And I started doing this, researching the project, it was actually my parents who said to me, when you're doing this, you have to include Nan Joyce. And I had heard of Nan Joyce, but I knew very little about her. I just knew that she was active in traveller rights campaign in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And so I went about looking for as much information. And she did write an autobiography that was published not long, actually, after this particular speech that I've included. But finding any of her speeches, she was well known for giving these wonderful speeches and wonderful addresses, but she didn't write anything down. There was no archives left. So there's a wonderful
and it was part of, obviously, because she was a traveller. She'd 3 years of primary education. That was it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she spoke off the cuff.
Off the cuff.
So how do you piece together some of these famous speeches?
Basically, from newspaper reports, in that instance, it was her speech at a Trochra seminar in Galway. It was so hard-hitting because she basically put it to the bishops that were running the conference at the time to say, here you are as, you know, putting all this money into the third world, as the developing countries would have been termed at the time. Yeah. And meanwhile, travellers are living on rat-infested camps. They're being evicted by vigilante groups. And still suffer from a lot of the things that she was concerned about at the time, like, a much lower death rate, age rate, I should say, for death, education, bars to education, all of these things. So she was remarkable. So it was great to be able to piece together.
Yeah, and it was a very simple call. She just wanted a share of what was going abroad to help
the people that were in
their own country. Hannah Sheehy Skeffington.
Anna Sheets Geffington, now when we're talking about a speech maker, this is a woman who really knew how to give speeches. She went over to America following, not long after the murder of her husband, Francis Sheehy Skeffington, who many people will remember was illegally shot and killed during the Easter Rising because he was a pacifist and hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
And she went over for really to kind of highlight what had happened and to get some justice for her husband's murder. And also it was coming up to the time where the British authorities were trying to conscript Irish men into the British army. And she gave no less than 250 speeches across America. So the one that I've included here is actually her very final speech that she gave. And that one was, we have the record of that because she was thought to be a threat to the, it was 1918, she was a threat to the British war effort.
Yeah.
So they had Secret Service agents track her and record every single thing that she said. So they had everything. And what's wonderful is in the speech, she even says, and I hope that the secret agent is writing this down.
Oh, really? You know, okay, so and they do.
Yeah, so she's, it's, which is amazing.
Great for historians,
yeah,
that they were obviously spying on these.
Yeah.
And some of them, the journalists started following them around, didn't they? And they actually sold papers. I mean, this was of huge interest to the public,
yeah,
even in America.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got, I mean, a prime one for that is Margaret Hinch, who was a woman who came from Limerick, moved over to New York, and in the late, it's a bit sketchy as to when she arrives in New York, but probably a late 19th century into early 20th century. And she worked as in the laundries of New York, really heavy, hard working, and became a trade unionist. And then she got involved in the suffrage movement. And in 1914, she was really kind of instrumental in this and got to address the president at the time, President Woodrow Wilson. But at this stage, she was known to be really and a really impressive speaker. The journalists described the fact that actually her audiences were afraid to clap too much in case they'd miss a word that she said.
Okay.
You know, so the journalists followed her around because they'd have these great attention grabbing, you know, headlines like Maggie goes down the trenches because she had gone down to where Irish labourers were excavating for the underground stations, you know. So wonderful, yeah.
And helping to spread the vote for women as well.
Absolutely.
Across the US. Then we come to kind of the modern era.
Mm.
And obviously 1990, the year we have our first female president, Mary Robinson, who was used to, she had done quite a lot of speeches anyway, hadn't she?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Mary Robinson actually first came to attention even in the Irish Times when she was a student in Trinity College and was involved in debating societies and talks. So some of her talks even at that stage are reported. And from the very onset, we see her challenging the systems already, even as a student, as a law student, saying that the Catholic Church has too much kind of control over the laws in Ireland and everything needs to be liberalised. So, yes, she's already at this stage very well known, I suppose.
Agitating away. It's a very famous speech. We'll play a clip of it. Can you set the context? I mean, at the time, was this would have been a fairly surprising speech because the presidency was very stale at this stage, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
It was a golf retirement party.
Yes, absolutely. And what's really particularly interesting about it as well is, so what it's the year is 1990, and actually there hadn't been an election for a president for 17 years before that.
Yes.
So, because what we have is, this was for, there was six presidents before Mary Robinson. And what will happen, as we know even now, that if it's kind of agreed by all parties and a president's been in, they can end up going back in for a second term without being, without calling for a referendum. So in this instance, there had actually been no elections at all for 17 years.
Right.
So if you think about it, it's anybody under 35 hadn't voted for a president until in 1990.
And had barely seen much of the president because...
Patrick and
Hillary
these were
was
all,
famously low-key,
yeah, all men...
It?
All elderly, and had all been put forward by Fianna Fáil.
And here's how all Mary Robinson shook the system.
Because I was elected by men and women of all parties and none, by many with great moral courage, who stepped out from the faded flags of the Civil War and voted for a new Ireland, and above all, by the women of Ireland, Manon Aherin. The women of Ireland, Manon Aherin, who instead of rocking the cradle, rocked the system.
So, Mary Robinson there, and she did just that, didn't she, in her one-term presidency?
I mean,
she changed it forever.
Absolutely. I mean, and it was, like, it was just extraordinary. And actually, for the cover of the book, I've used a photograph of Mary Robinson giving that speech with Brian Lenehan and Charlie Haughey flanked at either side.
Skulking
her, and the faces of the two of them just actually tell the entire story, you know.
So she set the scene, for Mary McAleese's 14 years. And but you pick out the speech, which is actually after her presidency, is it?
Yeah. So the speech that I have is actually her presidential inauguration speech. So that comes the months later. And the reason I think for that is because there hadn't been a great history. And in her autobiography, actually, Mary Robinson speaks about that as well, that there hadn't been a great history of doing, you know, anything particularly exciting for a presidential inauguration speech. It was basically just, yeah, thanks. Of, you know,
yes,
and
okay.
I will do this. So she was very committed to setting out how her presidency was going to be different in this inauguration speech. And she, you know, refers to people like Yvan Boland and talks about the poetry. She uses Irish language in a way that she hadn't been used to using before, and talks about how it's a presidency for the whole island. And so everything she sets out in that speech, I think, is very interesting because you can see her follow it through.
And Mary McAleese, the speech you've picked out is actually after her second term has ended.
Yeah, the Mary McAleese speech. I mean, I just love this one. It's actually from 2018. And it was when Mary McAleese had been invited to be on a panel, actually, just at the time for a Women's Voices Matter conference in the Vatican. And she was banned from actually attending. And it was Cardinal Kevin Farrell, who extraordinarily is the highest ranking Dubliner, Irish person in the Vatican.
Right.
And he just decided, he just vetoed her attending the conference.
And this obviously served to put a spotlight on what she was going
to
say.
It did, of course. So what happened was the conference organiser said, fine, we won't have the conference in the Vatican. We'll get a premises outside the Vatican walls. And we won't have Mary McAleese as just on a panel. We'll get her to give a keynote address. And she gave the most extraordinary keynote address, because this was all about the basis being that the Catholic Church is misogynistic and homophobic. And of course, here we are, we've got a woman who is a fine legal mind, but has also now got a PhD in canon law. So this speech is just, you know, it's amazing. It's extremely hard hitting. And she talks about how a tidal wave is coming towards the Vatican walls. What I found
really... And a devout Catholic, because she wants to change it from within, doesn't she?
Absolutely, yeah. And what I found extraordinary was that people were kind of wondering, well, what effect... And actually, Claire Byrne Live did a poll to find out what Irish people thought of the speech. 78% of people in Ireland were in agreement through that poll at the time.
Yeah.
So it's very... She's really, I think, at this stage, Mary McAleese, building up to this, you know, an issue that needs to be addressed. Yeah. And it is to save the Catholic Church that she wants to do it for.
And she couldn't have prepared a bigger limelight than being asked to step down and not get the speech. We step back a little bit. Maura Geoghegan Quinn is someone is often semi-forgotten in a way, isn't she? Yeah. Not quite as celebrated as she should be. She's the first woman to hold a cabinet position since Countess Markovitch.
Yeah.
So you think we should kind of know her. She should be a household name.
Yeah.
Tell us about her speech.
Yeah, her speech is the decriminalisation of homosexuality, essentially, is what would be termed. So until we have this speech on the 23rd of June, 1993, at this stage, we have basically the way I would view it is this hangover of the British Empire, that we had this law that was still enforced, the Offences Against the Person Act 1861. Mm-hmm. You talk about this archaic law.
Which the British had changed in 1967,
they had,
I think.
Yeah, so they had decriminalised male homosexual activity, which is essentially what it was criminalising in Ireland. But therefore, it was still, we were actually the only, as it was called, the EEC, the European Economic Community country, that still had male homosexual acts, if you like, as a criminal offence. Maura Geoghegan Quinn was the very first female Minister for Justice. And she set about changing this law as soon as she possibly could. She actually wasn't in that position for very long when it came to this speech. But what I think is fascinating about the speech is that although we have in the background, of course, David Norris and Mary Robinson, indeed, and their court cases that had gone to the European Court of Human Rights, and everybody, I think, in the background knew that this law would have to be changed at one stage, but it still wasn't happening. And it had been, at this stage, it had been 5 years before the European Court said, change it. So her speech is remarkable.
We have a clip of it here. So again, the context, she's in the chamber full of men. The government benches in Fianna Fáil are opposed to what she's
effectively
saying.
They are, absolutely. And it's also, she's bringing forward a law that actually was much more liberal than the British law at the time, because it was the equal age of consent as well. And it's a remarkable one.
And it's quite legalistic in its...
Yes.
Does anybody believe that if the laws from the last century, which we're now seeking to repeal, did not in fact exist, we would now be seriously suggesting that they would be enacted? How can we reconcile criminal sanctions in this area with the fact that there is a whole range of other private consenting behaviour between adults, which may be regarded by many as wrong, but in which the criminal law has no part to play?
Maura Geoghegan Quinn, 1993. You have another great speech picked out for Aidy Roach.
Absolutely. Again, when you say some of these women that have kind of been forgotten in some senses, and I think we were all very aware of the campaign that Aidy Roach was doing after the Chernobyl, horrendous events at Chernobyl. And, you know, this is actually her speech was, it's amazing because she was invited in 2016 by the government of Belarus to actually take some of their time slot for this United Nations speech for their country. And she talked about the consequences and the horrendous consequences of the nuclear disaster at Chernobyl, which had happened in 1986. And really, I think when I saw this speech initially, I realised that actually the amount of work that, of course, that we know that Aidy Roach has done with establishing their Chernobyl Children's International and all of this wonderful support that she's been able to do. But it wasn't just that. It was the fact that actually Aidy Roach is warning that really we're just going to have another Chernobyl. Chernobyl is still happening. The consequences are still there. People are still living with these horrendous consequences. And her speech actually impressed the UN so much that they declared an International Chernobyl Disaster Remembrance Day on the 26th of April every year. And of course, Ireland was the first one to officially commemorate that with President Michael D. Higgins, because, of course, Ireland has now got, is recognised, I suppose, as being, through Aidy Roach and through her organisations, as being one of the most main responders to help the people.
Incredible. And here's Aidy Roach speaking to the United Nations in New York on the 30th anniversary, which would have been in 2016.
Yet, my friends, it beats in the hearts of every innocent man, woman and child still living. It beats in their rivers, their towns, their streams and their forests. the deadly radiation clicking endlessly, ferociously in Geiger counters into the silent numbness that is and always will be Chernobyl.
Ah, that's great. That's A.D. Roach there. So the book is called Irish Women's Speeches. It goes right up to the present day because you've got Catherine Connolly in her response to the Mother and Babies Homes reports, which was this year. It was January 2021.
Yeah, January,
Look, it's been a pleasure. Professor Sonia Tiernan.
Thank you,
and, Oliver. And as Charlie Haughey skulking there behind Mary Russell, you have done the state some service, to quote his very self-serving final speech. That's out next week.
It is, yeah. It'll be in all good shops, as they say, good bookshops midweek, or it can be ordered from UCD Press online as well on their website.
Irish Women's Speeches, Voices That Rock the System. It's important one to have the bookshelf if you've got all the other biographies of men as well. Thanks a million. 51551 is the text number. We'll take a break.